Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
What's the laughing for?
I was just excited to be here. You know, it's like Christmas for me.
Brinson, you played in this league, you've coached in this league a lot. What is it about this opportunity that would attract you right now at this time?
Well, just really playing in this league and actually having the chance to play against the Tampa Bay Bucks. I'm talking about when they was at their heyday, and just seeing the excitement in this town, the fan base, the tradition of being a great defensive team, which I sort of marveled at even playing against them, then having the opportunity to come here and reset that foundation, you know, with some great young players, some stalwarts like Gerald McCoy, that's right there, you know, three of the most athletic linebackers you're probably going to find in the NFL, and having the chance to coach the guys that sort of protect them, you know, I had to jump at the chance.
You guys played a different defensive system in Arizona, but I know as a player, too, you've played, you know, a different system as well. But what are some of the changes you make as a coach, you know, going from that scheme, 3-4, to a 4-3 defense?
It's just really the amount of players that you're coaching on the field at a time. You know, in a 4-3, you got four true down linemen. In a 3-4, you got two outside linebackers at any given time that could be one. But, you know, my experience in Arizona, you know, a lot of teams kept us in nickel personnel, which really put us in the four down line. So it's actually great, great for me. You know, if I had some great training at that, and, you know, I get to keep those four guys on the field. Techniques are the same. You know, you want four guys that's going to get it, you know, being physical, being rabid dogs out there. And now getting a chance to coach those guys, four guys all the time, rather than a linebacker coming in and out, is going to be great.
Everybody, Brinson, focuses on sacks because it's a number and you can look at it. But from your perspective as a player and even as a coach, how do you judge pressure in terms of making the guy uncomfortable? And, hey, you might not get a sack on that play, but you made him throw it before he even wanted to.
That's pretty much you answered the question for me. You know, sacks are the ending of being in the right place at the right time, maximizing that opportunity. You know, you play 1,300 plays, and you have 10 plays, and they want to throw a parade. Well, what about the 1,290 plays that you have? And they're a great part of the game, but we want to affect the whole game. First of all, we want to make sure we stop the run. I think a lot of people get misconstrued about just getting sacks, but you stop the run and get them in those pure passing downs, not in those downs where it could be play action or the run PO, where everybody wants to run nowadays. You get to that point, then you go get that quarterback. And sometimes it's not going to be a sack, but if you're moving them off the spot, you're making them move his feet, you're hitting them, you're making them be uncomfortable. And that's what it normally happens for the first 3.5 quarters of a game. You look at the Super Bowl, not a sack all game, then it's one big sack and it's the biggest play of the game. So it's a matter of being consistent, putting yourself in the right spot, and constantly trying to break that wall down. And that's the way I judge. Are you always going to get sacks? No, because that offensive line gets paid too. But it's the consistent pressure, moving them off the spot, making him make bad throws, throw a little bit too early, affect the game that way. Interceptions normally puts the quarterback into the panic to hold the ball a little bit more, and it buys you more time to get to the quarterback.
Coach, how beneficial is it that you played in the league? And it wasn't 30, 40 years ago. I mean, you played in the generation of a lot of these players. What does that help bring to your job and help inspire these Buccaneer players currently?
I think it gives me the opportunity that when I talk about a situation, because it hadn't been that long ago that I played, that I can pull it up. If I tell you to keep your pass down because they'll drive you off the ball on the double team and you'll get slammed, I can pull up through a 12-year career where that's happened to me. So I'm speaking from experience, and, you know, and not so just coach talk. You know, I think this generation of players are more that, well, show me what you've done. And that's not to say anything bad about guys that hadn't played the game. There's some great coaches out there that's never strapped on a helmet and that can coach circles around me. But I think for being a defensive line, because it's such a hard job, you actually do some superhuman type things by holding on to 250-pound guys and, you know, and sacrificing yourself. And I can show them why I did it right. And I can more so show them why I did it wrong. And that's my thing, is that learn from my mistakes. You know, I played 12 years and made some mistakes on that technique-wise. Let me help you erase those things because I actually experienced that, and it makes you a better player. So I think that really helped me. Kevin Green, a guy I played with and with the Pittsburgh Steelers, he's like, when you got into coaching, you're blessed to coach the position that you actually played for a long time. Use yourself as the good and the bad example, and the guys will respect that, and it'll make you humanize yourself to them more easily. And so thank God for that experience.
The league has undergone such a vast amount of change in the short time that you haven't been playing. So, I mean, can you still coach the way you were coached because of the rules with the CBA now, as far as, you know, the limited padded practices and things like that?
I think you can, because, you know, when I came out, yeah, it was physical, it was a lot of hitting, but coaches put a lot of emphasis on the mental aspect of the game. And that's where I like to attack the game mentally. You know, physically, all these guys got some kind of physical attribute. That's why they're here. What separates the good ones, the great ones from the good ones, and the average, and it's the mental capacity. Can you slow it down? Do I understand this game more and more? No, do I understand what this guy can do to me so I know what he can't do to me? And so with the new CBA, you sort of attack it from that point of view, because you have so much time in the classroom, you want to constantly train that brain. It's the strongest muscle in your body. You want to get things that they become second nature. So you just repeating where it's going to the board, talking technique, showing it, so that now when they see it physically, they just react to it. So it's a way you can attack it. You can use it, because you're not always going to have the greatest players, or guys are not always going to be 100% healthy. But if you understand what your body can do, and you understand what this guy can do to you, you can always adjust and be a very productive player.
But with your success in Arizona, and you have Gerald McCoy, you mentioned Gerald McCoy, what are the pieces that are already in place that make you feel like you can be successful here in Tampa?
Well, you start with Gerald McCoy, which is a great place to start. There's 31 other coaches that would love to have that type of piece in there. So you have that. You have some young guys that are learning. You have some old guys that have seen a lot on that. So what you try to do is get that mixture together and make them all understand that it's something they need from each level of player. No, as great as Gerald is, it's something he might need from a Clinton McDonald, from a mental aspect, or he might need from a Will Golston, who is a younger guy, and you get them all to work together as one piece, one unit.
You know, a lot of guys that played as long as you did in your era, they don't coach. It's a big sacrifice. You did other things before you got into coaching. You remember what made you want to coach?
What really made me want to coach, I couldn't get it out of my blood. As soon as I got done playing, I jumped into coaching high school football. And then I went from a D coordinator to a head coach. Then I started training guys. And then I said, I'm going to do the ultimate. I'm going to coach 7 to 9 year olds. And to be actually the joy of seeing a 7-year-old who come to practice kicking and screaming because he don't want to play, and he's grabbing on the tires and he's throwing a fit, to 3 weeks later, he's having fun. He don't want to go home now. And that's the joy you get out of coaching. You know, for me as a player, the cameras and all that stuff is that's over with for me. I had enough of that. But the joy of getting a guy to do something that you know he couldn't do, and just see the look on his face, even grown men. You know, coming into the league, you have guys who they feel down on themselves, or, man, they say, I'm not a good run stopper or a good pass rusher. But you work on it, you give them technique, and you make them feel good about doing it. You see them have some success. You see that 7-year-old and that grown man faces. That's the joy I get out about. You know, guys can change their whole history, their time, their family timeline through this game. You have a big, great platform through this game that you play for free as a kid in the park. But now you got this platform where you can touch people and you can change your whole life and your family life, and that's what I get out of coaching.
Well, talk about preparing the last 2 years for game planning against the Buck offense, their offensive line, and Jameis in particular. Buck, what went through your mind those weeks when you were going to play Tampa's offense?
Well, first of all, you see those big five guys turn around, run out that huddle. That's one of the biggest offensive lines that we would face, and we knew that there was going to be a physical run game just based on playing in the NFC South and the type of mentality it takes to play in this division. You know, and we knew we had our hands tied behind our back. You had to be physical. You had to be willing to stick your face in the fan and be physical with those guys and stand toe-to-toe. But then also we knew that we were going to have to move Jameis. You know, you're going to have to affect him because that guy, I tell people all the time, I was at his pro day when he came out, and it's, I'd never seen a guy spin the ball like that in person, and I've always been impressed with him even coming out of high school, and I know he's a charismatic leader. You know, we wanted to get to him and just try to affect him, but we knew he was going to keep on coming throwing his fastball, and that's the one thing that we always respected with him. But we knew we had to go out there, and we had to try to make Tampa one-dimensional. You know what I mean? Whether it's take the pass away and make them try to force it down your throat. But we knew we could not give Jameis time because if he had times with his wide receivers, he's going to pick you apart. And I remember having great success early in the game. And they said, well, all right, we're going to come go no huddle. And it was boom, 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 boom. And now you're on the sideline cussing. Like, what just happened? But that was the type of weapons that Tampa had. And those are the type of problems that he presented as a great young quarterback.
Does he move a little bit better, Buck, than he gets credit for?
He moves a lot better. Because you see him walk. He walks like the 36-year-old Michael Jordan. You know, he's a little pigeon-toed. But he sways in the pocket. He's a hard guy to sack. He has that instinct ability to twist his shoulder and sidestep you, which a lot of guys would come back to the line of scrimmage like, I thought I had him. He just slightly moves out the way, and without looking at you, like he feels you, he has that sixth sense. So I think he doesn't get his credit because he's in a division with the Cams, and these guys look like racehorses, but Jameis is a guy that's very elusive in that pocket.
Did you know anybody on his staff? I mean, Jason Light, of course, was there your first year in Arizona. Did you know, is there any connections?
I had the pleasure of being coached by Coach Duffner when I played a year in Cincinnati. He was the linebacker coach. And then also he was at Maryland when I was at Clemson. So we had a relationship. And Brett Maxey actually was a assistant coaching with the 49ers when I played there. And then Paul Spicer, just knowing him through playing in the league and seeing them. So, you know, I really had a nice little relationship with those guys.
You mentioned, you know, you played on a great defensive line that went to the Super Bowl in Carolina. And, of course, you went to the Super Bowl with Pittsburgh. But Tampa was really still pretty good, too. Did you guys, I mean, you had some ferocious battles. Did you measure yourselves against each other at that time? Or?
Yes, so my first year in Carolina, we went 1-15. Then the next year, they changed the division, and we went 7-9, and Tampa wins the Super Bowl. So I came right down here for the first home playoff game and sat in the stands and watched. I came and watched. Me, Chris Jenkins, Mike Rucker, and Julius Peppers, as much as we disliked Warren Sapp, we admired what they did. And I wanted to see what kind of atmosphere they would create when they came out, the energy in which they played with. And to see those guys run out that tunnel on Sunday, you thought it was an earthquake. And I remember calling Mike Rucker from the stands, was like, this is what we got to create in Carolina. They're doing this with their front four. It's not the quarterback running out. It's not the star running back. This is the defensive line that's being introduced. And so we would sit back and marvel. And what we said, hey, we want to model ourselves after them, but also we want to get to the point when we stand toe-to-toe, we want to be the better model. And that's what we did. And I think that's what – it was a mutual respect that created hatred, competitive hatred between one another. But it was all out of respect. We wanted what those guys had created here, and we tried our best to get it.
I remember going to Spartanburg, it was about 15 years ago, right when you're talking about.
Yes.
And I think it was you that said, you know, hey, they got Sapp, we got Jenkins. And, you know, we ain't taking second.
And that started World War III.
It did.
And I wanted it because I actually admired Sapp because he would do those little jabs knowing that the other team would come back and his guys would step up to the occasion. So I said, well, all right, let's poke the line a little bit. Let's poke him a little bit. I got this big 320-pound, 6'4", young buck. Oh, he's the best defensive tackle. And I knew Sapp would come out. But I knew that would drive Jenkins because he was a quiet guy. And that would drive him because he would get mad if Sapp said something about me. So, like I said, I looked at that whole formula. I looked at the way Sapp carried himself. Then I looked at the way Simeon and Rice was just the coolest the other side of the pillow. He would come to work. I looked at Booger McFarlane, how those guys just played off one another. Everybody had their distinct role. And like I said, we tried to model ourselves after them.
Sapp has actually come out and been really critical of this defensive line, called their performance this past year disgraceful. So what's your relationship like with him now? And, you know, I mean, do you have any sort of communication with him? Because he's been pretty critical of this unit.
Well, I've seen him at the Hall of Fame game I had a chance to coach in this year. But great players seem to be. I played in Pittsburgh. I came in when they hadn't won since the Steel Curtain. And you just heard some of the stuff that Lambert Neal would say about us, you know, when we come in. But I think that's more so about the Tampa, the Buck pride. You know, him coming into this organization at the time it was when him, Derrick Brooks, and Warwick Dunn and all those guys came in here and what they built it to. And I think it's just like anything. You want to see your little brothers or you want to see your house still look good when we come by. And, you know, we all know Sapp is very brash, but I think it's out of a good place because he wants what's right for Tampa Bay. You know, this is, like I said, he knows how special it can be. And if you're a true competitor, you welcome that. You welcome that because Warren Sapp left Tampa Bay in a better place than where he found it. Gerald McCoy should want to leave Tampa Bay in a better place that he found it. And you continue to build that foundation, and then it becomes what people call dynasties, and everybody knows the standard is the standard when you step in, especially into that defensive line room.
When you talk about the NFC South, when you look at the quarterbacks here as a defensive line coach, Drew Brees, Cam Newton, Matt Ryan, twice a year, what's your initial impression of coaching against that quarterback royalty in this division?
Not getting much sleep because each one of them pose a different problem. You know, you have Cam Newton who stands out there and look at your defensive ends eye to eye, sometimes look down at him, and he can run and throw the ball, and he makes you play 11-on-11 football. So that's a problem within itself. Then you go down there and you go to Drew Brees. You know, all right, you're taller than him, but you never get a chance to touch him because he's so smart. He plays the game here, and you know that you got to be on your P's and Q's as far as taking away passing lanes and not giving him so much time. But then you can't get so in depth where you're going to get him, and now they got a two-headed monster run game, so they become even more balanced. Then you go down into Atlanta where Matty Ice, you know what I mean, he can go from being where he can't connect on a pass, and all of a sudden he completes 20 in a row. He throws 7 touchdowns because Julio Jones and that running game. So, you know, you got to be on your P's and Q's, and you got to always make sure you're at your best, because one thing all three of those guys seem to do, whenever you're lacking, they find that. So it can't be, I'm going to take this play off, or I didn't study enough. You got to go out there and mentally beat them. I mean, you got to know exactly what they're going to do, what they like to do, what they don't like to do, what can bother them. But then you got to make sure you're in a physical enough shape where you do it every play, because they're such great talents that one time you're out of position, that's when they take advantage of you.
Bob, do you believe certain cities or franchises are prone to loving the defense, like maybe Pittsburgh, Chicago, the Giants, and you talked about what happened here one day in Tampa
for a long time. I think it is. I think certain, and it goes to the fiber of that city, the fans. You know, a lot of fans have appreciation for just the tough hardness of the game, which normally is associated with defense. Not saying offense can't be the same way, but it's just associated. In Pittsburgh, you're just going to be associated with defense. They can have the leading offense in the history of the world, but that's a defensive city. And I think Tampa Bay, just the way it was built, you know, those guys came in and they built something special. They was winning games 3-0, 6-3. That's great defense. I remember Warren Sapp, you know what I'm saying, give us 3 points. That's enough. We should win the game. We up 3-0. That's us. And so people start to build on that. So I think once you lay that initial foundation and you have success with it, which meaning you got a Lombardi trophy in there with arguably one of the top defenses of all time. So people are going to like what they like. And this city longs for that type of defense because they saw what it did by putting that trophy in there. And so we got to try to duplicate it.
The D-line could have a pretty fluid lineup in terms of changes with personnel this offseason. How active would you like to be in terms of having input in free agency, going to pro days, being involved in the whole evaluation process?
Well, first, I just like to find myself around this building, you know, being my first day in here. But once I get integrated into what Coach Cutter and Coach Mike Smith and what Jason Lightning want their defensive line, the first thing I ask them is, what's the vision of your defensive line when you sit back there and you watching them play? And I want to make that vision come true. And now if they want my input on the players or they need my input, I'm willing to do that. But the ultimate goal is to give Tampa Bay what they need from a defensive line point of view to be a championship contender team. You just want to go through the process, put yourself in contention or the chance to play for it, and then you let the pieces fall where they fall down. That means going to 1,000 pro days and turning over every stone. I want to do it. I'm a guy that believes in, if you're a guy in that defensive line room and you got that Buccaneer symbol on your helmet, it's something you bring to the table, and you got to bring it every Sunday. It might not be as great as the next guy, but as long as you bring 100% of what you got, we can be successful.
When it was announced that you got the job, a lot of secondary guys that played in the secondary for the Cardinals were giving you props on social media. I just thought that was interesting that guys you did not directly coach were singing your praises. What kind of impact did you make on those guys that, you know, they you know, sought you out, say, hey, this is a great hire, good luck, you should be a defensive coordinator? That just struck me as interesting.
I use the word coach lightly. I'm a teacher of life. And that means I'm not just teaching life to my guys in my room. It's anybody I come in contact with. And I would stand up in front of the defense and tell the defensive line in front of the secondary, don't look crazy if they complete a pass. You're closer to the ball than they are when the quarterback has it in his hand. Go make their job easier. And our motto in our D-line room there was, well, let's make everybody's job better. If it's rushing the pass, let's make those defensive backs' jobs better. They got to run all over the field. You shouldn't want them to be tired after the game. And those guys sort of respect that. I never point the finger. I never let my guys point the fingers and say, oh, we need better coverage. No, we need to get that faster. If Drew Brees is getting rid of the ball in 2.1, we need to get down 1.9. Put it on yourself to wear that hat. And I think those guys sort of respect it because I was genuine. I wasn't doing it to kiss up to them. I was just doing that as the – if you're going to be the big guys, the big dogs out there, you got to wear the hat every down, every snap, no matter what phase of the game it is.
You were talking about the vision for this defensive line. What is that vision as you see it?
The vision for this defensive line is be physically and mentally tough. When you turn on that film, you're going to see four guys recklessly attacking the guy in front of them like their life depended on it. And when they can't do it, the next guy behind them is going to come in and do it. And we're going to work well together. We're going to hunt until the whistle blow. We don't want nobody to feel comfortable. Because all week long, that offensive line has told that coach and that quarterback and that running back, we can run this play and we can block those guys. And we're going to take that personally. And we're going to go out there. We're not going to go looking for a fight. We're going to go invite a fight when that ball is snapped. Because we want to be vicious. And we want to play that way. We want our play to precede us when we walk into the stadium. We don't want to say, what are the Bucks going to give us today? We know when the Bucks step on the field, it's going to be a battle. And we might not win them all, but your training room is going to look like we did.